I know a lot of you have had this experience because for those of us who in 2020 were all sent home and we were stuck in a lockdown during the pandemic, we had a lot of time on our hands. And I saw an ad for Masterclass and I thought, I want to better myself. I want access to all of these brilliant people who teach you things. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. Masterclass is the only streaming platform where you can learn and grow with more than 200 plus of the world's best and smartest. For just under 10 bucks a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to every instructor. And I don't care, you can wake up one morning and say, I want to learn about business. And then another where you say, I want to learn how to survive in the wild if I have no water and no fire to make me warm. You can access Masterclass on your phone, on your computer, smart TV, or even in audio mode. And the classes totally make a difference. Don't wait another moment to start your learning journey with Masterclass. Right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/Liz. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/Liz. Masterclass.com/Liz. Welcome back to Everyone Talks to Liz. Do you guys like or hate it when I reveal stuff about myself? I mean, you have to let me know, but since I can't hear you right now or I can't check Twitter, I'm just going to go for it. I'm always amazed by people whose lives span an almost unbelievable spectrum. So my mom is a great example. She was born in Canada to penniless Romanian immigrants. Okay, so here's her first end of the spectrum. Mom spent her early childhood years in the bitterly cold northern plains of Saskatchewan in a house with earthen floors. Earthen, like hard dirt. So no, they didn't have hot, let alone running water electricity. And my grandfather, who was a butcher, would go out and hunt for dinner. We're talking rabbits and deer, okay? Now, fast forward to the other end of the spectrum. Mom became a Shakespearean theater actress formally trained at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London, and later, with my dad, ended up living in Beverly Hills, California, among the palm trees and the glitter. So earthen floors to Beverly Hills. Now, anyone listening who, like me, was born into comfort, but whose parents had grown up poor and hungry, has to fight feelings, and I don't like this word, but has to fight feelings of guilt, right? As in, like, oh my God, I get to wash my hair with Evian water while my mom's family had to buy their water in barrels from the indigenous people of the Yukon. Okay, the Yukon stuff is true. The me washing my hair with Evian is not true, but guilt, I have always felt, is really a wasted emotion, but I've found that the way through that is to channel guilt into something more valuable. Try to live a good life. Give more than you receive, and with whatever good fortune you have, help the helpless. No one personifies that more than my guest today. Mark Wilf is the son of Polish-Jewish Holocaust survivors. So first end of their spectrum. His dad, Joseph, and mom, Elizabeth, were among the few who survived the Nazis' mass murder of the Jews. When they emigrated to America, they arrived as refugees who didn't speak the language and knew nobody. Now to the other end of their spectrum, Joseph made his way to New Jersey and founded what became a real estate construction empire worth billions of dollars and raised his sons to love America, philanthropy, and football. Today, son Mark is known as one of the most generous philanthropists to both Jewish and non-Jewish causes. Oh, and by the way, he's also the owner of the Minnesota Vikings. Mark, welcome to Everyone Talks to Liz.
Thank you, Liz. Great to be with you.
I'm really excited on this one. I mean, am I right, though? We grow up with all kinds of creature comforts knowing that our parents went through much more difficult times. It's a complicated emotion, isn't it?
It is, but thankfully, you know, for myself and my brother and for our family as a whole, we always feel very privileged and blessed. And my parents were always so grateful to what this country has meant for them and our family.
New Jersey is such a long way from World War II Poland. How old were you when you came to understand that your parents had actually survived Hitler's horrors and, quite frankly, the darkest time in human history?
Well, you know, we grew up around a lot of families that were in the real estate business in New Jersey, that many of them were refugees and They came to be builders in New Jersey and the New York area. And so it was around us. We knew it. But there wasn't, in my family, there wasn't much talking about the Holocaust and the survivor stories so much when we were younger. As we got older and into adulthood, I certainly found out more and more. But for my parents, it was about getting into the American society, working hard, educating us, getting into the community. And those kind of things were taking up so much of their time that there wasn't really a lot of storytelling of what happened. And it was frankly something they, it was painful, I'm sure. So those things came much more later in time. And sure. And we learned a lot over the years.
And so as a child, you're living the Jersey life. You're going to the Meadowlands. You're watching Giants, right? Giants, not Jets.
That's right. The Giants were always big Giant fans. And actually, my dad and uncle, one of our earliest partners in the real estate business, a gentleman who was a former college football player and had Giants season tickets and got us all to love football. And we'd go every Sunday. That was our ritual, to go to the Giant games and be part of football society. And it was a great experience. It was a great bonding experience for our family.
Do you remember your first NFL football game that you attended?
Yes, I remember early on going to Yankee Stadium myself and with my dad and my brothers and sat in the bleachers and watched the Giants play. And those were tough years for the Giants in the 60s and early 70s. And for my brother into the 50s, there were some good teams. And so we've had all kinds of experiences, but we were able to be fans when they won two Super Bowls. And more importantly, we realized and learned and felt firsthand that being part of going to football games was a great bonding experience, a lot of fun. And we learned how football and sports can bring families together.
It feels like it was a tradition almost for you guys. When I was young, my dad, who was Canadian, he got season tickets to the LA Kings, which back then, we're talking late 60s, please, they were horrible. And nobody was going in LA because, you know, they had the Lakers in front of them. And we'd go, and all of us, because we had five kids, so seven of us sitting in the cheap seats, just bonding.
Absolutely. It was special. In fact, the first quarterback I remember for the Giants was ironically Fran Tarkington, who in the middle of his career spent a few years in New York between his Viking stints. So talk about coming full circle.
Exactly. Well, it's interesting, though, that you talk about your parents not really talking about their experience. I mean, one of the things I've learned is that some Holocaust survivors have no problem telling their stories. Others do not want to talk about their experience. I mean, I've heard a speech by the daughter of one of the most famous, which is the Bielski brothers, those Polish Jews who hid and lived in the forest during World War II, and they organized partisan fighters to kill Nazis. She said her father was totally scarred from it and really was damaged by it. It doesn't feel like your dad was like that.
Well, it was the full spectrum, really, among the families we know. Some talked about it more regularly, some less so. I'd say our family was more in the middle. There were stories told, but it wasn't like they dwelled on it. They were so busy working, setting up a life for our family. So it wasn't until, for myself, when I was 23 years old, I asked my dad about some of these stories, and we went to Poland and Russia and visited their hometowns. My mom wouldn't go back at that point. And I learned a lot. I learned I had an aunt that perished in the Holocaust. I didn't know that till I was 23 years old, my father's sister. So things like that really, we had an opportunity there to visit the hometowns, realize where they grew up was not too different from where I grew up in New Jersey. They were nice towns. It's just a matter of the people did not want the Jewish people there. And there was the Holocaust and all the horrors we know in the history. And so it was a real eye opener for me, of course. And again, just realized with a lot of gratitude that we had the opportunity, that my family had the opportunity to be able to come to America and live the life they've been able to lead.
Did you feel like that thread, that underlying sort of less glittery thread that was going through the fabric of your childhood actually made you who you are today?
Well, again, my brother, my cousin, myself, all of us in our family had great role models to be around. My father and uncle were very smart people, very humble, but really working hard, I had a grandmother who basically was the savior of our family, and just such strength and determination, and just a nose to the ground about working hard and being grateful and always giving back where you can if you're fortunate enough to have. And so those are values. You know, I don't do too much self-analysis, but I can tell you to have those kind of teachers around you every single day, I'm certainly grateful for that.
Yeah, that is a true luxury that people don't understand is actually a luxury, to have that benefit of people who have seen the worst of times, but then who say, you know what, let me look ahead, let me look forward, let me be a reasonable optimist. This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Klayman. Just go to Indeed.com/Klayman right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Klayman. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So your dad doesn't just start a multi-billion-dollar business. I mean, what were the beginnings of that, and when did you join and help out with that business?
Well, you know, my dad was, when he first came to the United States, my parents were sponsored by the Birmingham, Alabama Jewish community. They spent close to a year there, and then they eventually made their way to New York. My dad was in the car business, but my dad and uncle, and actually my grandfather as well, all of my grandparents survived the war as well. They were all Holocaust survivors, but they started building small single family houses, one or two at a time. And soon enough, that led to apartments and then shopping centers and all the rest in the real estate business. And so a lot of their success, they built a business around a lot of people that they knew for many years that were their partners. They built together, many of them Holocaust survivors. But as the family grew, my cousin, my brother, and then later myself entered the business and started working together. And it's kind of interesting. A family business is, in a lot of ways, has elements like a football team. I mean, there's a lot of teamwork, and ability to work together is very important. And again, the example they led. The way they led was by that example. My father and uncle were extremely close. They were neighbors for over almost 40 years. The houses were mirror images of each other. They shared a desk in their office for 40 years. So that ability to be that close is a great example for all generations in my family. And I think no matter how business goes up or down, the lesson was to make sure to stay close and be together. And that's very important.
Well, it was like lightning in a bottle, and they became incredibly successful working together. Tell me, when the idea germinated about buying the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, like I said, we were very engaged and loved football. And my father and uncle were offered many times opportunities to invest in sports. In fact, the predecessor to the New York Jets, the New York Titans, I think in the early 60s, they were offered it for basically $50,000 meeting a payroll or two. And they passed then. Later, the Philadelphia Eagles were out there for, I think, $6 or $7 million in the later 60s. And then, in fact, when the New York Jets were sold in around 2000, we were also approached. So it was always around. It wasn't something that really we connected on any of it, but we always loved football. And then 2005, the opportunity came to invest as a minority partner in the Minnesota Vikings. And we joined the group to bid on it. And my brother Ziggy, myself, my cousin Lenny, and our family, my dad was very much encouraging. And so long story short, We purchased the team in 2005. It'll be our 19th season.
Oh my gosh. So the New Yorkers buy the Minnesota team. How does that work?
It works great. The Vikings, of course, have a national following. Certainly those great, great teams in the 70s and beyond, all the purple people eaters, the Fran Tarkington and all, Chuck Foreman, all those great players led to a great following. And the people in Minnesota have been very welcoming, very encouraging when we purchased the team. And we've really had a great deal of partnership on the business side. Public-private partnerships with our sponsors and our fans have been so welcoming to us. So even though we did not spend a lot of time in Minnesota growing up, we really feel, in a way, adopted sons, so to speak, of the community, and they've been great.
You go to every game. You fly from New Jersey to Minnesota for every game, right?
Half the games, the other half for somewhere else. But yes,
you go to the other ones too?
We go to as many as we can get to, and And it's really a great bonding experience. Just like when we were watching the Giants, it's been great for our family to rally around the team through the ups and downs. And again, we bleed purple now, and we love the Minnesota Vikings. We've, like I said, have been able to elevate, I think, the franchise. I hope our fans agree. We're every single day, we're so privileged to be stewards of this great franchise, and we just want to bring a Super Bowl trophies, I should say, plural, to the Minnesota fan base. They deserve it. They want it badly as we do. And that's what we're trying to do every single day.
Well, you know, that is a tough, tough thing to do. And listen, go for it. But never change the purple, right? Never.
Never. Purple and gold. Again, we've our fans are the best fans in the NFL. And We just want to reward them with the trophy.
I know how much you want it. Well, I love the Nordic look to the whole Viking image and the mascot and everything else. You know, how do you pronounce that horn?
It's the Gjallarhorn.
Gjallarhorn.
Gjall. So that's how you that's
Gjallarhorn.
So we're working on our Nordic
accent,
but I can tell you we're very proud. We have a. If you haven't been to U.S. Bank Stadium, I hope people listening out there get a chance to come. We're the number one ranked stadium in the world.
Oh, and by the way, we have to discuss this. It has a glass roof and the largest glass doors on the planet that reach up. How tall are they, these doors?
Over 100 feet, the tallest doors, pivoting doors that really let in the outdoors, connect to Minneapolis, and it's just such a great experience.
So much of going to a football stadium in the past was, I mean, certainly when I lived in Ohio and I went to Cleveland Browns games at the old Memorial Stadium, it was a painful experience. The food was awful. There were bits of metal that had been broken through by the bitter wind coming off Lake Erie from Canada. It was freezing. There was nothing. But you know, it was the dogs. It was the Browns. It was awesome. But now, when you look at some of these stadiums, it's all about selfies and giving people an opportunity to have great food and just improve the experience. So you've got this gigantic Gjallarhorn that you had put in. Whose idea was that? And could people take pictures and stand by it?
Oh, yeah. You know, when we built the stadium early on, we always felt, I know there's some great experiences out there. You have the 12th man in Seattle, some other great fan experiences to kick off a game. And we just felt to honor our fans, honor our legacy, we wanted something special. So we have this enormous Gjallarhorn hanging from the incredible clear roof at US Bank Stadium. And it's not just about our players, our fans. We want the fans to feel it's a family atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So we want to welcome people and kids take pictures. And we have tours that are really well attended and just, it's such a great energy on a Sunday to hear the fans and do our skull chant together. Our skull chant was something we picked up along the way from our friends in Iceland. That was one of their national chants when they had some sports success. So we adopt great ideas and where we can. And it's been a great, we have the number one ranked game experience out there. And
well, the inaugural game at the new stadium, you sounded that horn. And that brings me back to the Jewish aspect of it. Of course, traditionally on Yom Kippur, the Jewish New Year, we blow a ram's horn. Who That's knew right. that there was the Vikings and then, of course, the shofar?
Another reason for some of our fans to root for us. We have horns on the helmet. We have horns everywhere. And it's a lot of fun.
The money that has come from the business that you all work so hard for, and of course the football team, you don't just sit there and consume it and cars and fancy houses. You've actually used it for change-making philanthropy. The National Holocaust Survivors Initiative, which assists some of the approximately 25%, this shocked me, 25% of the 120,000 survivors in the United States who live in poverty. What do you do for them?
Well, we certainly want to make sure that the survivors, who I consider heroes in many ways, they're educators to not just the Jewish community, but to society, to remind us of where intolerance can lead. So we make sure that they get funds for food or medical care and do all those kinds of things. And we're proud to support that. You mentioned about giving back to the community in Minnesota, for instance. You know, when George Floyd, when the murder of George Floyd happened a few years back, and even before that, we work with the players. We have a social justice committee where our players sit on it. And we donate money to the committee, and the committee selects where the funds go to. So we have three big priorities: reducing socioeconomic disparities, adopting education curriculum, and advocating for law enforcement and criminal justice reform. So we work with the players. They decide where the funds go. I'll give you a great example. We go with a group of high school kids from Minnesota with some of our players every year, and a group called Project Success gets the high school kids. Many of them have never been on a plane before. They go to Washington. We go together with our players, with our ownership, our management, and we visited the African American History Museum and the Holocaust Museum, and we talk about their history, our history, and talk about how we can make a better society together. And those things are so rewarding. You know, sports and NFL has that platform that we yes. can really change lives.
Oh, yes. And the fans themselves, you know, you have an opportunity because there's a captivated audience where you can take them and you can say, there are bigger things here. There are bigger, bigger things here. And you also went on a war-related mission to Poland to help Ukrainian refugees.
That's right. Yes, we've been very involved in that. And in fact, it really was very full circle for me. I went to the border town of Medyka in Poland, right on the Ukraine border, when the war first broke out. And we visited Ukrainian refugees coming across the border. And my dad grew up 10 minutes from that border area in a small town called Yaroslav. And years ago, when he was a refugee, no one looked after him or my mother or their families. And here we are. I came on behalf of the Jewish community, but all of us that are privileged, we're able to give back, and now we're able to help the refugees that are coming over. So for me, that was a very full circle moment and something I'm very proud of to be part of. And we still have work to do, of course, there. And I think, again, the platform and talking about it on these kind of platforms has really amplified the incredibly distressed times that are still going on today there.
I have to say, Poland has been amazing and generous. The people driving throughout the night to the border to help bring total strangers, refugees, to homes to feed them, to keep them warm. That was a very, very uplifting moment during a very worrisome time, which is still going on, obviously, with the Russians just invading and trying to snap off huge chunks of Ukraine. We don't know how that's going to end. But one of the things that, you know, this is just coming to me right now, but I'd love your thoughts on what this country is seeing right now. There's real tension between races. We're seeing an unbelievably frightening rise in anti-Semitic attacks. What is going on, Mark? And how do we stop it?
I think we have to figure out ways to dialogue with each other. I think social media and other things exacerbate that people stay in their own channels. and their own lanes. And I think we have to find common ground on things we agree on. And there are many things that are great in this country that we can all agree on. I mean, I want to start on a lighter note. Of course, sports can bring many people together.
Yeah.
And that is a starting point. We do have a lot of dialogues among people from all different perspectives to talk about other things. So it is a challenge. I feel the extremes in this country, we lose track of the common themes that we have together. And that's about tolerance and making sure everybody has an opportunity to be able to live freely and reach their potential.
And we all have similarities. I often say, you know, Italians are very much like Jews. Jews are very much like African Americans in the way they come together around food and family and tradition. We have more in common than we do making us strangers amongst ourselves. So I agree with you on that. One of the points that I want to make to our listeners, too, is, you know, even if you don't watch football, one thing you all know, especially recently with the concussions that a lot of these players have, is when they leave teams, they're alone. The country is littered with former NFL players, alumni who spent or lost all their money. Many of them went bankrupt. They're left with broken bodies, sometimes emotional pain. And nobody there afterward, after the cheering dies down and the gates are closed to them. Your family has dedicated two full-time positions to handling, well, you call them alumni, and you take care of them. Why spend the money and the effort looking backwards to team members who maybe have been long forgotten? Tell me what's at the heart of that.
I thought, you know, even though the NFL and the Vikings, it's a business, we know in our own experience that it is about a family feeling, and our legends, we call them our legends, really built our franchise. And the alumni and all the great players of years past, they built the NFL. And so we just had actually a couple weeks ago at our home opener, our legendary coach Bud Grant passed away this year, and we honored him. We wore our classic uniforms and we welcomed back our players from the 70s, 50-year anniversary from some of our Super Bowl teams. So we want to make sure they're taken care of. We work with them to have different fundraisers and bringing them together. And just most importantly, to remind them and thank them always that we had many great memories with their play. As kids, we watched them. All our fans remember all their great moments. But when they're done with their career, we want to make sure they're not forgotten. And so that's why we give back where we can to take care of them in any way we can.
Yeah, the Purple Brigade. Oh, my goodness. And by the way, back to the stadium, 66,000 purple seats.
And everyone is filled on Sunday, hopefully. And very, very exciting atmosphere.
Tell me about how you think it's important to raise your children, because then you get a bigger distance between the generation that sacrificed so much, your parents or my grandparents. And I'm trying to make my kids, who have every creature comfort, from iPhones to a roof over their head to not having to worry about much at all, quite frankly, you know, it gets further out and you want them to remember that those who went before them sacrificed and endured so much. How do you do that as a father?
Well, I think the only examples I know of parenthood firsthand are my own parents. And so for my wife, Jane, and myself, and for my brother, cousin, and others in our family, I think I know what we try to do is try our best to live a life by example that hopefully they can emulate. So no matter what we say, it's still ultimately about our actions. And I think things like philanthropy, things like sports, whether you're a fan or an owner, things that can bring a family together will hopefully give them the values to understand tremendous gratitude for what they have, and hopefully an understanding that through life's ups and downs, it's hard to do it alone. And so you need to depend and work with others, no matter what environment, within your family or outside, to make your life richer. So those are the values, but by example and how we live our life, that we hope to pass on.
There is a Jewish saying among the Jewish farming community that, especially back in the medieval times and Eastern Europe back in the olden days, if you had a plot of land When you tilled it and when you harvested what you had grown, you should always leave a little corner of it untouched for the poor in the community to go and take some of it. And this is very much a part of our heritage, I think. And I agree with you. You know, you learn that from your parents to say, no matter how much or how little money you have, save a little corner of it for those who are less fortunate. You know, I did one great podcast, one of the early ones with John Paul DeJorio, self-made billionaire. He and his mom and his brother had to live in a car. They were homeless in San Diego for many years. And he said, every time we'd pass a homeless person, my mom would say, take out a nickel or a penny, because no matter how little we have, there's somebody who has less than us, and give it to them.
No question. I think, you know, having privilege, it shouldn't be a standalone. With privilege comes responsibility. And you should give not till it hurts, but till it feels good. Mm. And that's that's the way we like to look at things.
All right, Mark, we need the Vikings to win a Super Bowl. I might forego my Browns winning one if the Vikings did, because, well, who's had a dry spell longer? It's got to be the Browns.
I think we're both through, okay?
We're both pathetic.
Okay, so let's say Skull Vikings and whatever the Cleveland Dog Pound does.
You know, we bark.
Let's hope good things happen for your fan base and for us. For I'm sure we're going to be working hard for our purple.
Well, I'm going to sprain my ankle jumping on the Vikings bandwagon, because I like your spirit and I like your background and your story. Mark, thank you so much for sharing it.
Thank you, Liz. Thanks for having me.
Mark Wilf. Oh my gosh, you guys. Okay, so are we all Vikings fans? We need to cheer them on. But we also need to absorb what Mark has just shared with us. And no matter how little or how much you have, always save some for those who are less fortunate. I'll leave it with that. And by the way, you've got money, you need to preserve it and grow it. And you do that by watching the Clayman Countdown on Fox Business Network, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern. I will see you guys next time. Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.